Tampa Bay. There you go, Tom Brady.
Hold on, let me play that again.
11:20 to go. We are at the 3-yard line, moving left. Here is the play action fake. Brady throws the ball, caught Mike Evans, touchdown Tampa Bay. There you go, Tom Brady.
You know what was weird about that game yesterday? As we welcome you back into the 3 o'clock hour of the Burns and Gambo show, at least what was weird for me, it wasn't like it was Tom Brady's best game as a member of the Buccaneers, right? Threw a lot of short passes. He had a lot of attempts. He didn't have a lot of total yards. He was perfect in that he didn't make any mistakes with the ball, unlike his colleague across the field in Drew Brees. But Brady relied on a really good defense, a decent run game, didn't get great performances from Antonio Brown or Gronk or Evans or thing like that. Even Brady's numbers were kind of, they were just okay. And yet here we are, Tom Brady, 14th conference championship game and 9th in the last 10 years,
yeah,
remarkably.
You're 100% right. Listen, I definitely think that they should have benched Drew Brees, and I think that Sean Payton made a terrible mistake. Drew Brees didn't have it. His arm's gone. He's got no arm strength at all. He can't get the ball out there. And he was terrible. I mean, the interception by Murphy Bunting took it to the 1-yard line, set up the touchdown to Evans. You had that. And then the other interception, the one by White, he kind of like threw it, didn't even see him. He threw it right there. And then the interception by Edwards. I mean, those interceptions to the end of the one by White, and that kid's fantastic. My guy, he was one of the best players that I've seen this weekend that I didn't know a lot about. Devin White. I know he played at LSU, but he was a beast.
He was everywhere. He was everywhere on that field.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, I know he's a high pick and everything, and I never got a chance to really watch him play. I honestly thought he was the best player on the field. I thought he was so good. But, you know, early on, it just, you know, you had the Winston threw that touchdown pass to Smith. He was wide open, but he threw it 56 yards. Great play call. At some point, I thought that they should have went to Winston. It was obvious that Drew Brees wasn't able to move the team up and down the field. And I know they wanted, you know, they lived and died with Drew because this could be his last game. But I think you owe it to your team to try to win the football game. And I think that Winston might have given them a better shot because he could get the ball down the field and Drew couldn't get the ball down the field.
I know. It's just a real dicey proposition, right? I'm not
so
even
what?
Saying you're wrong. I know. It gives you a lot to think about. What's the priority here? Is it to keep Drew Brees as your quarterback until he retires and uphold kind of the legacy of that, or is it to try to win a champ to the conference championship game? And look, Drew Brees was it was obvious he was. I don't know if there's ever been a more obvious situation of father time beating a player right before our eyes, as we saw yesterday with Drew Brees. I mean, I'm sure we could go back and look at it and find another game in another sport that provides a better example. But in that moment, father time kicked Drew Brees right in the backside for 3 hours yesterday. And it was tough to watch, man. It was really painful to see him not even be able to throw the ball 20 yards down the field. He didn't even try one pass 20 yards down the field. Not once. He just didn't have the arm strength to make those passes.
No. And at the end of the game, when you really needed him, you know, because you had the lead. I mean, they had the lead. They're up 20-13. And then, you know, Cook has that fumble. That was a big fumble, too, right? Everybody's talking about Brees. But the fumble by Cook was because Tampa Bay had just punted the ball, and New Orleans is up 20-13, and you got this 3rd and 2 that you convert to Cook, but Winfield knocks it out. And then Tampa Bay takes the ball, and they score a touchdown to Fournette, and now it's tied. So I think the biggest turnover in the game was the one by Cook.
No, I would agree with you because at that point, Saints had the lead. At that point, it was still the third quarter, and that play was a huge, huge turnaround in that game. I think the interceptions obviously didn't help, especially in the fourth quarter. Whenever New Orleans was trying to mount some sort of a comeback, it seemed like Drew Brees undid it. But that Jared Cook fumble, I thought, was the one that really turned the tide. As far as Brees and whether it's the last game for him, here's how it went down yesterday after the game.
Yeah, hey, Drew, I hate to start with this, but is this your last game?
Well, I'll answer this question one time, and that is that I'm going to give myself an opportunity to think about the season, think about a lot of things, just like I did last year. and make a decision.
He was on the field afterwards. His wife, his kids, Tom Brady came up and said hi to him after the game, after they
threw
were
a
out
pass
of their
to
uniforms.
His kid.
Threw a pass to his
threw
kid.
Threw a pass to one of his kids.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many reports leading into this game on Sunday that this win, lose, or draw, this was going to be it for Drew Brees. That whenever they lost, it has to be the end for him.
Has to be.
Right?
Yeah. Listen, when you get to the point where, I mean, they won a lot of football games, and I'm sure that he could still go out there and win some games with the right team, but he just doesn't have the ability. Like, you're a shell of your former self now. Like, the arm strength is gone. Like, it's just gone. You can do these short dink and dunk passes and everything like that, but, you know, the few times you're going to need to throw it down the field, man, it's just, yeah, I mean, at this point, just go out. I mean, you've had a great career. You're loved in that city. You won a Super Bowl. I mean, you're a great community guy, man. That guy gave back so much to that city in New Orleans. He's very well respected. So I just think, yeah, I mean, just this is very light. I can't imagine he comes back. They don't want him back, right? So that's the tough part, too. Like, they're ready to move on.
Yeah.
They're ready to move on. They just need him to be able to say it. He's got to be the one that says, okay, I don't want to play anymore.
Yeah, because
they don't want to be the ones.
No, they don't want to be the ones to turn their back on him because you're right. It's got to be him turning his back on them, and it's just time. It's well past time probably for that, especially when you consider, and this blew my mind when I saw this stat. I sent it to you today. The Saints have won 49 regular season games in the last 4 years. The most wins in a four-year span by a team that failed to reach a Super Bowl. They went 11-5, 13-3, 13-3, and 12-4 in the last 4 years and didn't even get to a Super Bowl. Nobody's ever won that many games over a four-year stretch and not made it to the Super Bowl. And
so,
not that that's all Drew Brees, mind you, but that's a team that needs to do something different now, obviously.
Right. So go out with that instead of going out 5-11. Don't go out 5-11 because you can't play anymore. Go out with those. Taking a team to the playoffs, go out like that. You want a playoff game. Don't go out like, you know, on a team that goes 5-11 or 6-10.
And now, on the other side of the equation, there is Tom Brady once again going to. Okay, let me ask you this question. I know how much you hate Tom Brady. I know how much you hate Tom Brady. Is any part of you rooting for Bruce in this?
No.
Not at all?
Because Brady's his quarterback.
There's no balancing act. There's no canceling out of your Brady hatred with the fact that you liked Bruce when he was here and you'd like to see him do well? Not at all?
I mean, I like Todd Bowles. I like Bruce. I like that. But I don't want Tom Brady to win another Super Bowl.
Okay.
I really don't.
Okay. All right. I'm just checking because, look, I'm not a Brady hater the way you are. So I don't feel as strong. I'm not in a rush to see him win another one. I'm kind of sick of seeing him win them, to be honest with you. But I do find there is a part of me that would love for Bruce to get his, you know.
You know, there's always these athletes and you're like, man, I'm going to miss that guy. You're going to miss him when he's gone. Larry Fitzgerald, when he decides not to play anymore, man, we're going to miss him when he's gone. My God, I'm not going to miss Brady when he's gone. I'm so tired of Tom Brady, man. Just go away. Go. Whatever. Just go away. I'm not going to miss you at all. I'm not even going to think of. Just go away. I mean, and that's a credit to how great he's been, right? That's a credit to just how damn awesome he's been in his career. And, you're right. I mean, he didn't have, like, this great game. I mean, you go look at some of those drives, 8-yard pass here, 9-yard pass there, 10-yard pass there. There's a lot of 10-yard pass to Brown, 8 to Fournette, 9 to Goodwin. I mean, a lot of it was like that. But he manages the game as good as anybody will ever see. We'll never see anybody that manages the game the way he does and converts third downs the way he does. So he's just a great player. And then, the one time when he got that third and five, I don't know if you remember late in the game, when they got the field goal to go up 23-20, he hit that Miller kid for like 28 yards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that was okay. I can still get, but he, unlike Drew Brees, I can still get it down the field. I'll take what you're giving me, but I'll also, on that drive, there was a 3rd-and-1 they converted, a 3rd-and-11 they converted to Johnson for 15, a 3rd-and-5 they converted to Miller for 28, and then they kicked the field goal. Like, he still has the ability to make that play down the field, especially in Bruce's offense.
Yeah, he does. But if you look at the numbers, 33 passing attempts for only 199 yards.
Yep.
There's nothing, you know, and he had that patented Tom Brady quarterback sneak, which he might be the best who's ever been at that. But yeah, I mean, nothing special with the numbers. Nothing special at all.
No, but look where they got look at their field position. I mean, after the White interception, they got the ball at the 20-yard line. He scored the one-yard touchdown. They got the ball at the 20-yard line. They didn't have to go anywhere. They had to go 20 yards. They kept getting good field position because of all these turnovers by New Orleans.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like they had to go 80 yards down the field on a lot of these drives. They had really short fields to work with.
My favorite little nugget from the game yesterday, just because the way you hate Tom Brady is the way I hate the Dallas Cowboys. I sent this to you. This is a meme.
I saw that. That
NFL
was good.
Meme. This NFL NFC championship game appearances – since 1997, Tom Brady 1, the Dallas Cowboys 0. Years in the NFC since 1997, Tom Brady 1, the Dallas Cowboys 24.
Wow.
It took him 1 year to do what the Dallas Cowboys have not been able to do in 2.5 decades. I loved that. I thought that was great.
At some point, great. I don't know. I mean, at some point, we'll just have to say no. Like, I think we're there now. No matter what, this season was a success. Tampa Bay won 2 playoff games. They're in the NFC Championship game. It doesn't have. To me, they don't have to win the Super Bowl, or maybe even get there. They had, they've had a lot of success. They are one of the 4 teams left, and I think that makes it a successful season.
Totally agree with you. When we come back, for the first time in 27 years, the Buffalo Bills are in the AFC Championship game. Can they go one step further? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We promised you updates throughout the Suns games. We'll give you one. 10 minutes to go in the first quarter. Suns are up 2-0 over the Grizzlies. Game just started. We're off to a very ugly start so far. Devin Booker's hit a shot. Everybody else has missed. And they've been playing for like 3 minutes.
Turn that on right now.
Nobody can make a basket. I mean, everybody, it's just miss after miss after miss. But... Oh. You know what?
It's not like they've been playing or practicing a lot.
No, I know. You know what? That's a good point. Rustiness was to be expected a little bit, but the Suns and the Grizzlies are playing, and the game is underway. And we'll keep
John Morant back from Memphis, too.
Yes, that's right.
John Morant's back.
Ankle issue.
Played the other day.
That he was dealing with as well. So, yep, Suns are back on the floor. And again, they're a little thin on the front court. No Dario Saric. No Damian Jones. No Jalen Smith. Ayton and Kaminsky are the only two available big guys they've got. And Cam Johnson, there was a change to the starting lineup today. Cam Johnson got the start. Jay Crowder is now coming off the bench. The final playoff game that we have not spoken about yet today, Gambo, the Buffalo Bills in the middle of whipping winds and awful-looking conditions in which the ball was moving more than a Charlie Huff knuckleball. The Buffalo Bills were able to hang on and beat the Baltimore Ravens, and they used a play that was, as you pointed out, eerily reminiscent of a play that once bit the Arizona Cardinals on the backside all those years ago, the 101-yard interception return for a touchdown that was the backbreaker for Baltimore.
That was, Johnson took it 101 yards, and Lamar Jackson, you saw him afterwards how mad he was at that throw. And yeah, remind me of the James Harrison. This kid's a third-year cornerback out of Weber State. He went untouched, 101 yards, you know, down that sideline. And then right after that's when Lamar kind of got knocked out of the game, and they had to bring in Tyler Huntley. But that play right there, right, that was the back-breaking play. That was the game. That was the game. If you were looking for one point in the game that really helped the Buffalo Bills, it was the defensive side of the ball. It was that play right there that, to me, got Buffalo that victory.
Yeah, that was absolutely, because it was kind of a messy game in part because of the weather. You saw Justin Tucker, who's the best kicker in the NFL. He's doinking it on the left. He's doinking it on the right. Josh Allen, his passes were all over the place in part because of the wind. I'll tell you, though, much in a kind of similar vein to Brady and the Bucks that we just talked about, Josh Allen was fine. It was Buffalo's defense that clearly won this football game for the Bills, because they blitzed the hell out of Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, and they were blitzing like 50% of the time at one point in this game. And that running offense that ran roughshod last week couldn't get going at all against Buffalo on Saturday night.
No, I mean, what did Lamar finish with? 162 passing yards and 34 rushing yards.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the fewest points that they scored since they lost 20-3 to the Colts in 2009. I mean, it's just the first time they failed to reach double digits in points since 2018. The Buffalo defense stepped up and played a great game. They did. Nothing bigger than that interception return for a touchdown. But, you know, going into this game, I like the Ravens because I liked Justin Tucker over Tyler Bass. Tyler Bass missed two kicks, right? He had two kicks that went wide right. Justin Tucker bounced two tries off of the upright in the first half. So, I mean, the wind was just, I mean, a field goal kicker's nightmare was that win. But the Bills, you know, they played a good game. They didn't play a great game, so they're capable of a lot more. But they come away with the victory, and now they're playing in the AFC Championship game for the first time since 1993, when Jim Kelly beat Joe Montana in a game. Montana was with Kansas City at that point.
Yeah, they've won. The Bills have now won 8 straight, including the playoffs, 11 of their last 12. And to your point, since the last time they were in the AFC title game, they have gone through 21 starting quarterbacks, 9 head coaches, and 1 owner, basically, since the last time they were in this position. It has been a long, long time. And outside of Cleveland, it's hard to imagine a fan base that is probably more rabid and more deserving of getting a team back to relevance, right? Because those Bills fans are nuts. They're great. They are so passionate. They love that football team. Not that they love it any more than any other team does, but they've just been so beaten down over the years. I mean, the Bills have not really been relevant for 20, 30 years. And for them to get back to this spot, that's a big deal in that town for them to get back to this
spot. Yeah, I remember, you know, they had Drew Bledsoe was their quarterback for a little while, and they had Doug Flutie as their quarterback for a little while. I actually remember when Joe Ferguson was their quarterback, you know, before Jim Kelly. They had an unbelievable run with Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed and Cornelius Bennett and Bruce Smith and Marv Levy. And I mean, those teams are very memorable. All of us remember those teams and how good those teams were. Josh Allen's got something special going right now. I mean, he does. He's got something special going with him and Diggs. And, you know, there, Beasley is fantastic. But their defense was the unsung hero in that win over the Ravens. There's no question about it. The defense really stepped up. And I think that's what shows you why this team is very dangerous, because they're very capable on both sides of the football to beat you. And they were better than the Ravens. They were just – I liked the Ravens going into this game, and I was wrong. I think you went 4-0.
I liked
New Orleans.
I did.
And I liked the Ravens, and I got both of those wrong, and you picked every one of the games right.
Yeah, I went 4-0 this weekend, and and this was the one that I was probably the most uncomfortable about. And I even watching that game, I was uncomfortable. I mean, just because Buffalo was – offensively, they were just so one-dimensional. They only had 32 yards rushing. They didn't call a rushing play the entire first quarter. The Bills didn't. They only had 3 in the entire first half. It was all on Josh Allen. It was all about what he was going to do. I mean, the Ravens offensively, they outgained Buffalo. The Buffalo had 220 yards offense in this game. They only had the ball for 24 minutes. I mean, they didn't do anything special. Again, some of that was due to the conditions and just how the situation was there. But I think the Bills are obviously capable of playing a whole lot better. And obviously, I think they're going to. Sorry about that. Obviously, we think they're going to, because I've got them beating the Kansas City Chiefs next week. Yeah, and some of that, admittedly, is because I don't know whether Patrick Mahomes is going to play or not, right? There's a little uncertainty when it comes to that.
We don't know. I mean, you know, the Bills seem to be getting better and better, you know, as the season goes along. But you're right. I mean, look, do I think that Chad Henne's going to win that game? Both teams are cold weather teams, so it doesn't matter how cold it is. They're both cold weather teams. There are times when Buffalo can be colder than Kansas City, a lot of times. So I don't think the weather is really a factor in the football game. But if it's Mahomes, I feel good about Kansas City because I picked Kansas City all the way through. But I think that Chad Henne could come in and lead him to a victory over the Bills? Probably not. probably, you know, he got that. He did a good job subbing, and that's what you want. You want a quarterback that can make some plays, and a backup quarterback that can make some plays, give you a chance to win. I think he's that guy. But can he win a big game?
Yeah.
Step in if he has to replace Mahomes? I don't know. I wouldn't count on it.
When we come back today, the NBA postponed its 15th game of the season. The Phoenix Suns right now are in the middle of their game against the Memphis Grizzlies, but it does beg the question, should they even be playing these games right now? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. It's 3:30 in the afternoon here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Phoenix Suns with the 10-point lead now over the Memphis Grizzlies. Frank Kaminsky.
You can't stop him.
You can't.
You cannot.
2 for 2 from the 3-point line. He's got 6 very quick points in his 1 minute of play. He's come in. He's been able to do what nobody else from the Phoenix Suns has been able to do, and that's make shots. 8 and 1 for 4. Booker 1 for 5. Chris Paul's 1 for 2.
Four rebounds for DeAndre, though. 4 defensive rebounds in seven minutes.
Yeah, I also saw him fumble a ball when Devin Booker was trying to pass the ball down low to him. He kind of kicked it around a little bit and couldn't handle it. But, yes, he does have the 4 rebounds as the Phoenix Suns have the 10-point early lead against the Memphis Grizzlies. How close do you think this game came to not being played today? Do you have any idea at all if it was something that was discussed not playing this game today, given everything that's gone on?
No, I think that they were – I think from the weekend on, they were pretty – you know, they felt pretty good that this game was going to be played on Monday. You know, the Suns tested Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then today, Monday. 7 days of testing before – you know, 7 tests before they played this game. And they let it play out long enough to where, okay, they've got 2 guys that are obviously in the health and safety protocols right now, and nobody else was. So they felt like they had enough available players, which they do. So I can only tell you from the Suns' point of it, because right now 9 players have played in the game. So far, 9 players have played. So they had enough. They have enough bodies. They have a couple of guys that aren't eligible, Dario Saric being one of them because of the health and safety protocols, but everybody else has passed all of their tests. It's a week. I mean, it's 7 days. So I think at that point, the NBA was like, okay, you guys are healthy enough to play, because all these players that are playing right now have had negative tests from Tuesday till today.
Yeah, there was one postponed, I should say, game from today, and that's the Cavs and the Wizards. And that's one that we knew about. Now, the Pistons and the Heat, they were supposed to play earlier, and that game got pushed back later. I would imagine, I read somewhere where it definitely was a COVID-19 situation, and I would imagine it was because they were waiting for some test results to make sure they were all clear. But it does kind of beg a question about whether, you know, how much the league is taking a chance by continuing to play these games. And I understand this conversation's been going on for the better part of a week and a half now. But it does seem like the league, like the leagues before them in other sports, are very much committed to pushing through as best as they possibly can when they're able to.
Where were we at Friday? Did any of you guys remember where we were at Friday when we said, okay, these are how many games would have been postponed. Let's see where we're at next Friday.
I think it was 10? I think it was 12.
Was it 12?
I think it was 12. I think we were at 12 games postponed on Friday.
Okay, and now we're at 14 or 15?
14 or 15, I think.
Because I think there's a game for Wednesday that's already been called off, right?
Has there been?
Charlotte,
I don't know.
Game?
The Charlotte game, is that the one the Charlotte Hornets? The Wizards Hornets game, is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, Wizards Hornets.
That one's already
off.
Been, okay, so that's the 15th game.
That's the 15th game that's already been called off. 15 scheduled games have now been postponed. And you think we were at 12 on Friday?
I believe so, yes. I think we were at 12
okay.
on Friday.
Okay. Because I'm looking at the list of all the games that were postponed. And you get, you know, so, and 14 of these 15 games have been since January 10th. It's only January 18th right now. So from January 10th, there was one game on the 10th, one on the 11th, one on the 12th, 3 on the 13th, 3 on the 15th. One on the 16th, one on the 17th, one on the 18th, and we know one is going to be out for the 20th. So there is, you know, they're managing it, a game here, a game there. You just wonder what happens if, you know, if you have a day where you can't play five games or you can't play six games or you've got a team that's going to miss, you know, more games. Like you can't go – like, this is the thing that I think about. Okay, you got three games the Suns have missed. Okay, you can make those up over the course of the rest of the year. But if they have another stretch where they miss three more games, okay, now you're not making up those games. You're not making up six games in the second half of the schedule, even with the 1 week that, you know, that you'll get no games played because for the All-Star game, which they're not going to play, but they give it a week for the All-Star game for guys to rest and stuff. I don't know that you can make that up. So you are getting dangerously close to the point where you're not going to play all these 72 games if these teams miss any more games.
Yeah, and I wonder if that had, and I agree with you, that there's only a certain number for each team. And I don't know if it's three, if it's four, if it's five, before they will get to kind of the point of diminishing returns where you just can't, we don't have enough time for you to make up every single game that you've missed. And I would think the Suns are getting awfully, awfully close to where that limit is.
The Wizards have fifth straight game postponed.
Yeah.
So now they're at five. So the Wizards have had five straight games postponed because of the virus. I mean, how are you going to make that up?
It's not like you can play seven-inning doubleheaders like they did in Major League Baseball. We were talking about that a little bit on Friday, too. Like, at least in baseball, they had this seven-inning doubleheader deal where, like, take the Miami Marlins. I mean, they missed games for, what was it, 10 days, 11 days? It might have even been close to 2 weeks that they didn't play any baseball. They made up the vast majority of those games, but they did it because they played seven-inning doubleheaders for basically almost the entire duration of the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season, right? You can't do that in the NBA. And it's a different – with the NBA, and this was something we were talking with Kevin Pelton about last week, there's only so many games you can play in a week before bodies start to break down, before the product gets diminished, before the quality of play gets diminished. And I think you're right. If it gets any more than three or four games missed for the Phoenix Suns, then I think you start getting into that area where you're not going to be able to make them all up, which might be one of the reasons why this game was being played today, because you could have made an argument that this game shouldn't have been played today with Memphis and everything that's gone on with them, right? You could make the argument that it's not the Suns' deal that would have caused this game to be postponed, but it's Memphis's deal that could have caused this game to get postponed, because in some ways they're dealing with the same things that the Washington Wizards were dealing with a week ago at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, because the teams that they played, right? They played Minnesota, and Minnesota's got issues now. So they played, was it the Sixers? So they played Wednesday, they played the Timberwolves, and then the Timberwolves lost a lot of their guys to safety protocol, including Karl-Anthony Towns, although they played today. They did play today. And then the Grizzlies was supposed to play Saturday night against the Sixers, but they didn't have enough players to suit up. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing you worry about. You worry about what happens if tomorrow we find out that one of these players on the Suns or the Grizzlies tested positive. Well, it takes us one. If one of the players playing in this game tests positive tomorrow, well, then that shuts down both of these teams for days, maybe a week, because all these players, because of the contact tracing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the thing. I'm watching this game, and I'm thinking, if one of these players tests positive tomorrow, then the NBA shuts down both of these teams, correct?
I would imagine so, yeah. Yes. I mean, just based off of contact tracing, you would think so.
So you've got to hope, that 18 to 20 players that get tested tomorrow don't have the virus. Because if one of them does, it affects everybody else.
Yeah. Monty was asked before the game on what's happened the last week with his team.
There's a number of things that we probably all felt we were just waiting on the league to give us the okay to get back together. It was certainly something that was out of our control. We were trying to do the best we could to inform the staff and players when we got information. And then you just got to a point where you just took advantage of the time away.
You got rest. You watch tape. You took advantage of the time away. As the Phoenix Suns have hit a couple of three-pointers now, they've opened up a 24-16 lead with about 45 seconds to go. Chris Paul just hit one. Javon Carter hit one a moment ago as well. So the Suns are winning by 8 on the road against the Memphis Grizzlies, having not played in a week, Gambo. And this week, it's a busy week for them, too. They've got Memphis. I think they've got Denver a couple times. I believe they have Utah this week. They're on national TV a bunch this week. I think all three of their games, their next three games, are nationally televised games. Busy week for the Phoenix Suns, and the hope, obviously, is that they're going to be able to play these games.
Yeah. The other thing you got to think about, too, like, there's a lot. Okay, so now, to make up these games, you could have conflicts with these teams that share buildings with the NHL. So you take Washington, right? They share a building. Well, now you're going to have conflicts because can we play that day? Well, no, because we've, you know, because that, you know, your hockey team's playing that day. So that could be the other thing that they're really looking at, and that's going to be a problem for the schedule makers too in the second half of the season, is the teams that share a building. Now, the Suns don't have that. They don't deal with that, so they don't have to worry about that. But a lot of these other teams do.
Yeah. When we come back, is Deshaun Watson about to force his way out of Houston just like another Houston superstar did a week ago? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
And there's going to be a lot more to this. And it's a little early in the process, considering that the Texans just hired their new general manager, Nick Caserio, and they don't even have a head coach yet. But you can begin to see this particular situation unfold as the offseason goes on. What we know now is this, that basically, according to Sarah Barshop, who covers the Texans for ESPN.com, Deshaun Watson has not returned calls from the organization. What we also know is that he's very unhappy with the way the organization has proceeded this offseason and has looked back at some of the organization's prior actions.
As Adam Schefter on ESPN, he also reported over the weekend, there is a growing sense that Deshaun Watson has, quote, played his last snap for the team, close quote. We've talked about this many times on the Burns and Gambo show. And now Deshaun Watson, maybe this blows over, maybe everything's okay, or maybe, like James Harden did about 5 or 6 days ago, maybe Deshaun Watson becomes the latest Houston player to force his way out of Houston. It was a crazy weekend of news for Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans, Gambo.
Well, Harden had his debut with the Nets, and it went fantastic. I mean, it was great. They had no Kyrie Irving in that game. But they played extremely well, and Harden was great, and they won. But there's a blueprint there. I mean, if you're Deshaun Watson, there's the blueprint right there. I mean, you know, in Houston, James Harden didn't want to be there, wanted to get out, and forced his way out. Now, you could do the same thing. Don't return phone calls. Look, there is a, like I said, a blueprint. There's a blueprint for it. There's a way to do it to get out no matter what. And if he follows that, he's going to be out of there. I mean, even to the point, I was reading, you know, Mike Sando, we've had on several times. He had a best trade fits for Deshaun Watson. Number one to the Jets, package of picks and Sam Darnold. Number two to the Dolphins, Tua Tagovailoa and a package of picks. Number three to the Falcons, two firsts and two seconds. Number four to the Lions for Matthew Stafford and some picks. And number five to the 49ers for Jimmy Garoppolo, Nick Bosa, a first and a second. Those are his trade scenarios. And everybody's getting to the point now where, you know, you look at it at where he could go to. And these teams, you know, you're the 49ers. You would trade Garoppolo and players for Watson. If you're the Lions, you trade Stafford. If you're the Dolphins, Tagovailoa. If you're the Jets, Sam Darnold. I mean, yes, if you have the ability to get a talent like Deshaun Watson, all these teams right now are discussing what would we give up to get him.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I hope the Cardinals are. I don't think they will. I mean, I don't think.
Well, that's an interesting. You think the Cardinals should discuss it?
I think just about every team should at least have a conversation, an internal conversation about what would we have to do to get in on this? Do we have the assets to get in on this? And is it worth it for us to make a phone call? Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I'm not saying. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not endorsing them doing it necessarily.
Look at it. Yeah.
Look at it.
Yeah,
you at this point, Deshaun Watson is an upgrade from Kyler Murray. I mean, there's very little question in my mind about that because Deshaun Watson is there. You don't know if Kyler Murray's going to get there or not. You know Deshaun Watson is there, and reuniting him with DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, all the benefits that would come with it. It's just the question of you'd have to give up Kyler, obviously. What else beyond that would you have to give up to make something like that work? Because draft-wise, you have in the 16th pick, you might not have the assets that, say, the Dolphins do or the Jets do. Or
that higher pick.
Yeah, you don't have a Nick Bosa that you can throw in there. You know, it's different for the Cardinals. But should they have an internal conversation if they haven't already? I think they should, absolutely.
Well, you know, if I'm the Texans and I want to keep them, I mean, a lot's going to depend on that coaching hire. And if you make a coaching hire that he likes, maybe he's okay, I want to play for that guy. And if you don't, that'll probably, you know, continue to lead to the speculation that he's going to get traded. So then you get, you know, if you just wanted to go about your business and hire the people you want to hire without him, and I think you should. I don't think that Deshaun Watson should have a say in who you hire. I really don't believe that. You could have discussions with him and kind of keep him abreast of the situation and here's what's going on, but I don't think he should pick the GM. I don't think he should pick the coach. But if you get to the point where he just continues to be unhappy even after you make a coaching hire, well, then you got to look at what kind of bounty can you get for him.
Sure.
And we're talking about, I mean,
a big bounty.
A plethora of a James Harden-type bounty.
Yeah, a big, big bounty. In fact, you mentioned the Harden thing. Here's Schefter again on Get Up, saying that at this point, Deshaun Watson has, and I don't know if he mentioned Harden specifically, but he said NBA-type leverage right now.
What we can see here is that not only can Deshaun Watson request a trade, but he also could decide to withhold his services. And because of the no-trade clause in his contract, the Texans have very little control here. Essentially, this is like an NBA situation. This is Deshaun Watson getting to pick where he wants to go. This is an NBA-style trade if and when the Texans get to the point that they are ready to make it, which they're not right now, but I believe, and other people around the league believe, they're going to be forced to get to eventually.
You mentioned Sando with the ideas that he put out there. The folks at sportsbetting.com actually have odds on you can wager where Deshaun Watson is going to go. The Jets are the favorites, according to that website. Bless you, by the way. Jets are the favorite at 2-1 odds. No problem. We're here for you, Cambo. We got you covered. The Dolphins are next at 3-1 odds. The Bears at 4-1. The Broncos at 5-1. The Cardinals, 70-1 odds to get Deshaun Watson. There are only four teams in the league that have longer odds than the Arizona Cardinals. The Bills, the Seahawks, the Packers, and the Chiefs. That's it. So if you're going to bet your money on who it's going to be, you're going to get very long odds that it would be the Arizona Cardinals, and you're going to get very short odds that it would be the New York Jets, Dolphins, or Chicago Bears.
You know, I think you could take out probably at least 10 teams right now that you could take out. You could say, okay, these teams would not be interested in him. Like, the Buffalo Bills, they're not going to get him, okay? The Cleveland Browns aren't going to get him. The Ravens aren't going to get him. The Bengals aren't going to get him. That's four. Kansas City's not going to get him. That's five. The Chargers aren't going to get him. That's six.
Okay.
The Packers aren't going to get him. That's seven. Tampa Bay's not going to get him. That's eight.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle's not going to get him. That's nine. And the Cardinals aren't going to get him. That's 10. That would be it. That's the only 10 I can come up with that aren't going to get him.
I was looking at the NFL standings, kind of playing along with you, and you're right.
I got 10.
I wouldn't have too many other arguments there. I mean, that's remarkable when you think that you can really only rule out roughly one-third of the league.
And who else would you rule out?
I don't think there's anybody else on that list that you just mentioned that I would, based off of their quarterback situation. And even then, I would rule out the Cardinals just because I don't think they have the assets to get it done. But I still think it's something internally they should discuss and at least explore. to see if there's something to be had there. I don't. After what happened with DeAndre Hopkins, I don't know if the Houston Texans will ever deal with the Arizona Cardinals again. but I think it's worth discussing it. But yeah, most every team in the league should be having that conversation. And for what it's worth, Deshaun Watson asked Monday of his fans, apparently there was a protest on his behalf that they were going to like march today in Houston about specifically Deshaun Watson. Quote, although I'm humbled, I ask that whoever is organizing the march cancel for the sake of public safety. COVID is spreading at a high rate and I don't want any fans to unnecessarily expose themselves to infection, close quote. He tweeted that out this morning. Apparently there was some protest planned, or at least being talked about in the Houston area, to protest what the Texans have allegedly done to Deshaun Watson and all of this, and he asked them not to do it. Very interesting.
Yeah. There will come a point where if the Texans just come out and say, we're open to trading him, well, then the gates are going to open, right? Every team in the league is going to be like, okay, here's our offer. Because these teams, you're right, these teams are discussing it internally right now. Well, how far would we go to get him? This is how far we'd go. And you can say that if you're the Texans. Look, he doesn't want to be here. We're open to trading him. Everybody send us your best offer. And then you're going to get 20 teams that are going to send you an offer.
Absolutely. And then you can just pick and choose. As long as it's a place he wants to go, because he's got the no-trade clause that Schefter mentioned, you have to work with him on this one. But yes, you would get flooded with options. We'll give you the very latest on the Suns. They're taking on the Grizzlies right now and how exactly they stayed prepared during what amounted to an off week. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.